Hi there. Just a quick message before this episode starts. Today we received the tragic news that Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, has passed away at the age of 99. Our deepest condolences go out to the royal family as the world comes to terms with the loss of an iconic gentleman.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Chatting Like Champions. I'm joined by my co-pilot Pavan, and we have two special guest appearances throughout the episode as we talk about a very exciting first leg of the Champions League quarterfinals and a special on Arsenal. How are you doing, Pavan?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. You know, the Champions League brought some more action, didn't it, this week, and I can't really wait to talk about it.
So, as I mentioned before, we're joined by, obviously, two guests throughout this episode. One is Pavan's brother, Josh, who actually gave us our name for our podcast, Chatting Like Champions. And the other is a current University of Nottingham student who also happens to be a YouTuber called Mahel Khan. So stay tuned to hear from both of those. But let's get right into this mouth-watering set of results that's happened over the past week.
So, Real Madrid-Liverpool, a repeat of the 2018 Champions League final. A final that gave us Mo Salah's tears, Karius' tears and jubilation from the Los Blancos fanbase. It was a game of the backup centre-backs, with Zidane forced to play Militao and Nacho, with Varane and Ramos unavailable, and Klopp also sticking with the Phillips-Kabak partnership. Now, Liverpool stuck to their principles and played their infamous high line, but Real were looking for the long ball every single time. And when Toni Kroos picked up the ball in the centre of the pitch, he hit a perfect pass to Vinicius Jr., who took the sting out of the ball with his shoulder and coolly finished past Alisson. 10 minutes later, and the German veteran looked for the ball in behind once more. This time it didn't find a teammate, but Alexander-Arnold decided to head it into the path of Asensio, who found the net with his second touch. Liverpool emerged after the break with much more intent, and Diego Jota's deflected shot fell to Salah, who grabbed a vital away goal. However, the damage was not done, as Luka Modric glided into the 18-yard box, found the young Brazilian, who scored his second of the night, through the legs of Nat Phillips. Now, Kieran, obviously, you know, this game was hyped up to be, you know, an absolute cracker, and it kind of was, but I don't think many were expecting it to fall into kind of Zidane's hands as it did. But, you know, his game plan worked to perfection. And where does this leave the second leg?
I don't know. Zidane's plan definitely worked a treat against Klopp. Obviously, as we're going to talk about in a few minutes, Klopp obviously blamed the fact that they were playing at a training pitch on their loss. But I don't think that makes much difference. A football pitch is a football pitch. As long as it's got the same, like, good surface, it's that doesn't make any difference. But I think second leg could shape up to either be another historical night for Liverpool, almost like what they did to Real's rivals in Barcelona, yeah, or Real are just going to hold on to this lead, and it could end up being a very cautious game from them, because I don't see Zidane risking going and attacking Liverpool when they know how Liverpool can hit them on the break. And on their night, Liverpool are still a very, very solid team. So, but it definitely did go wrong for Klopp here. Obviously, they went two down, and it just didn't look good for them. It didn't look like they were going to score throughout the first half. They were woeful in the first half. Only in the second half did they start looking like they actually had some fight, and it's a real problem if that's going to be how they approach these Champions League games. Like, I know, obviously, the excuse this season has been on injuries, which, fair play, they've had a fair share of them, but I think it goes deeper than that. I think their mentality this season hasn't been what a champion's mentality needs to be able to hold on to these titles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, you do have to stick to your principles, play the way the manager wants you to play, and not kind of, you know, that's what a great team is. They just play their way, and they let the other team figure out how to stop them rather than trying to figure out how to stop the other team. But you did feel that during that game, it might have been wise to take 5-10 yards, take a step back, you know, prevent Vinicius Junior from having that extra space to run into, because he was kind of doing it all night, and Asensio obviously did it on the other side. But you know, the Liverpool manager, you know, was unhappy with the venue, as you said. He claimed it affected his team's performance. Now, the company who makes 3D models for Los Blancos sent a special package to the German. If that result left Klopp disheartened, then a model of the training ground may have just set him off once he returned to Merseyside. Despite the renewed optimism around Klopp's team, they were hit by a severe case of deja vu, as the result mirrored the one from Kiev 3 years ago. Hello and welcome back to Suitcase of a Superstar, the feature where you have to guess the mystery footballing superstar. It can be someone from the past or the present, a player or a manager. Now, usually I would provide you with the five clues, but in this episode, you'll be receiving them from my little brother. He has been requesting access to the Champions Airport for ages, so I've given in and granted him a one-day all areas access pass. Here we go.
Clue number one. This player has won two European championships with Spain, one in 2008 and the other in 2012, and also won the 2010 World Cup.
So, in the second game, it was Haaland against one of his biggest suitors for his signature, and it turned out to be a great game. Obviously, this was Manchester City against Borussia Dortmund, which ended 2-1. Pep recently have seemed to favour having no striker at all, opting to start no Aguero or Gabriel Jesus, and have either Bernardo Silva or De Bruyne as the central attacking player, which is obviously a very interesting tactical approach that he has taken up. Obviously, Gabriel Jesus did come on later on in the match, but he didn't do too much in the ways of scoring. Dortmund started very brightly in this game, creating a few chances that forced Ederson into some saves. And it looked like they really were going to trouble the Man City defence throughout this entire game, which obviously they did. But all of that hard work in early on in the game was undone by an Emre Can mistake in the 18th minute, where he gave the ball away and City worked it across the face of goal to Mahrez, who kept the ball in, passed it to De Bruyne, and he slotted it past Marvin Hitz in goal, which was obviously a very coolly taken finish, as you would expect from Kevin De Bruyne. City then had a penalty reversed by VAR, where Emre Can was penalised for a high boot, but honestly, it looked more to be a low head, and I think that's what the commentators said in this as well. And at the end of the day, I think everyone can agree that that was the correct decision. He hit his shin, I think it was, or his knee. It was one or the other. So it wasn't a high boot at all. It was pretty sensible challenge by Can. Dortmund did keep coming at Manchester City, however, and in the 36th minute, this is where the biggest talking point of the game happened. Bellingham was through on goal after snatching the ball from Ederson, but the ref blew the whistle before he slotted it away, and what should have been a Dortmund equaliser was ruled out wrongly. So, obviously the ref blew before the ball went across the line, which meant that VAR couldn't actually do anything about this. So, obviously this is the most contentious moment in this game. So I just want to kind of get what your thoughts are on this and what could have possibly been going through the ref's mind in that situation.
You know what? I think it's just the pressure of when Ederson falls to the floor. It's a dive. We from the replays we can see that. But when the player dives to the floor, and as we know in modern football, goalkeepers have a lot of protection from the referees nowadays. Any little touch on them from a corner, you know, if they spill the ball, it's a free kick to that team. So, you know, in that sense, I can see where he's coming from, because the goalkeeper looks to have been fouled. But, you know, why not just wait a couple of seconds and let the ball roll over? Like, if they've been educated and taught, how to, you know, utilise VAR in the game, they should know, you know, don't blow your whistle. I mean, we see with the offside, the flag doesn't go up for another, like, you know, it basically doesn't go up until the play has stopped. So, you know, they can allow for any mistakes to be checked by VAR. So this referee, I don't really know what he's doing, why he's blown his whistle early, because if they checked it, it would have been a goal. And, you know, it's just a shame for Jude Bellingham more than anyone, because, you know, to be 17, balling against one of the best, if not the best team in Europe at the moment, robbed of his first Champions League goal, you've got a feel for him and got a feel for Dortmund.
Oh, yeah, obviously it was the most contentious moment in the game, and there's been images all over social media where it actually shows that Edison actually boots Bellingham, and it should have been a foul the other way around, if anything, like if they were going to blow. But it's just one of those mad moments in the game that we've kind of come to get used to at this point. Another bit of madness in the game, which isn't so much to do with the actual play. It was more Erling Haaland showing his strength, where he kind of just brushed off Ruben Dias as he was through on goal. Obviously, Ruben Dias being one of the best defenders in the Prem this season, and he's obviously a very physical defender. Haaland just ran past him like he was nothing, which really shows... I know we talk about him a lot, but it shows how powerful and how big of a player this he could go on to be. But it's not every day that you can get someone to run past a centre-back like they're nothing. But Dortmund eventually did grab their equaliser in the 84th minute, where Bellingham, yet again, threaded a ball through to Haaland, who then cleverly wrapped his left foot around the ball to feed it onto Royce in what would have been quite a hard pass, to be honest. And Royce then calmly finished past Edison to level things up with a crucial away goal. However, the game was only level for another 6 minutes, and City pulled ahead again through a Phil Foden finish. De Bruyne supplied yet another stunning pass to Gundogan on the near post, who then slipped it to Phil Foden, who finished across the face of goal, setting up a very, very interesting second leg. Obviously, Dortmund only need one goal, but it's whether they're going to be able to keep City at bay here. I suppose the question on everyone's mind here is, will Pep overthink it, or will he stick to what he knows works? Because that seems to be what he does in the Champions League. He seems to try to switch it up at the exact wrong time.
Clue number two. This player has played in three of the top five major leagues and has accumulated two Champions Leagues and four league titles.
Bayern Munich PSG. Yet another game that brought together previous opponents from a Champions League final, but this clash was fresh in the minds of both sides. The holders suffered the first blow with a PSG counter-attack, allowing Neymar to slot in Mbappe, who scored, but with a lot of help from Manuel Neuer's misjudgment. Another moment of brilliance from Neymar as he caught the Bayern Munich team asleep from a corner. He wrapped his weaker left foot round the ball, and Marquinhos must have been reading the same script as he took it down and doubled their lead. Now, you know, the king, Choupo-Moting, scored a header from Pavard's early cross, and Thomas Müller also scored a header, this time from a Kimmich free kick. Now, at this point, it looked like Bayern were in the mood for more, and Pochettino would have been fearing the worst. However, his team responded with another breakaway goal as Mbappe found the near post after toying with the substitute, Jerome Boateng. Now, Kieran, this was probably, you know, a Champions League, I don't want to call it a classic, but depending on how the second leg goes, this could definitely be a classic tie, because, you know, it had goals, it had, it just had everything, really. It had snow, you know, that was a special kind of weather moment during that game. But, you know, PSG set up to counterattack, exploit the high line, you know, another team playing a high line, as Liverpool did, got exploited. Neymar and Mbappe ran right, to be honest. They didn't even need a physical presence up front, because when Bayern gave it away or lost the ball, PSG were off. Neymar and Mbappe just sped off, and you know, Neuer probably should have prevented that first goal, but you know, that's what Mbappe does at the moment. If you give him that time and space, that's what happens. So where do you see this one going in a second leg? Because I think this is really hard to call. And as much as I want Bayern to go through, I just feel like I don't know if PSG will capitulate as they have done in kind of recent seasons.
We both predicted a Bayern win in this result. Obviously, my key player played a bit more of a role than yours did in this, as you can see on our Instagrams. But I think it's going to be a very interesting second leg. As you've said, I don't see PSG capitulating like they have. They have Mauricio Pochettino, who, yes, he's never won a major trophy, but he is, by all means, a world-class coach. And I don't think he needs... Obviously, like, him getting a trophy won't do anything to harm his reputation at all. But I don't think he needs to have a full trophy cabinet to prove that he can... that he is still one of the better managers out there. But I really don't know where this is going to go now. Obviously, there was a bit of a resurgence from Bayern Munich through Choupo-Moting and Müller. But and with players that they have, like Alphonso Davies, Kimmich, they're not even the attackers. They're just very, very solid players that play behind the attackers. Obviously, they've still got Sané, who is still a very good player. They've got Koeman, who was your key player. He can have a moment of brilliance. It's going to be a very, very interesting game coming up because I think it's impossible to call. It's kind of a coin flip. PSG have three away goals, but like it doesn't matter against Munich. They can either thrash a team of PSG's caliber, and like it's nothing. All they need to do is turn up and be on their game, and they can do it. But I just don't know whether that's going to happen here or not. I've given such a bad answer here, but it's just so hard to call. I want to stick by Bayern, but you've got to say that PSG are in a very strong position now to go on and win it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Bayern created, 31 chances yesterday. I mean, you know,
I think PSG had seven, was it? Seven shots?
Seven or six shots, and they scored three. So, yeah, Bayern Munich, they're on a roll in terms of creating chances, but they just didn't seem to have that kind of killer instinct that they have been. But they could have.
I saw some memes, and it was like it was like Brighton Munich, and obviously that caught my eye a little bit, but it just made me laugh a bit because it genuinely is like a carbon copy of how we play sometimes, and it's just unfortunate, honestly, especially in a game this big that Bayern couldn't finish off their chances.
Yeah, I think it is that, but it's also. They didn't do enough to prevent the counter-attacks. Like, if you know, you have to kind of be alert. If you're going to play like that, you have to have your midfielders and you have to have your defenders switched on and you know, making sure they can make the right decisions and make the last-ditch tackles that will prevent Mbappe and Neymar getting to the penalty area. But they didn't, and they paid. I mean, if Flick was worried about the injuries before this game, the situation has gotten a whole lot worse. Because Süle and Goretzka are both injured, and Pavard was also limping at full time. This was certainly a Champions League cracker, but I'm still unsure as to what game Martin Keown was watching. He seemed to be co-commentating from an alternate reality with Chupo Motta and Marquisio finding the net. I guess we'll never know.
Clue number three. This player retired in 2017.
Chelsea emerged victorious in the first leg over a club that obviously picked up a shock win against Juventus, and that was obviously FC Porto, who lost 2-0, and obviously they were at home, so Chelsea had picked up two vital away goals there. Personally, didn't enjoy watching the game, not because of how the ball was being kicked around or how either team was playing, but purely off of Chelsea's ghastly kit. Honestly, whoever did that needs to get fired. It's one of the worst kits I've ever seen. But going on to the game, Porto started quite brightly, creating a few chances, which forced Mendy into some saves. But obviously, it wasn't enough. Mason Mount opened the scoring in the 32nd minute after receiving the ball on the turn and finishing with a low-driven shot from the right side of the box into the bottom left of the goal. Once again, showing his importance to this Chelsea side, and it was a really impressive goal, actually, looking at it back. But it was obviously that taking the ball on the turn like that, the pass was also a really good pass from, I think it was Jorginho. It was a really good move by Chelsea. And I know you don't like complimenting Chelsea much, but I think even you have to admit it was a really well taken goal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Mount just found that little bit of a brilliance, took out, I think it was Mbemba, former Newcastle centre back, and then a very smart finish, you know, round the corner. Possibly the goalkeeper could have done better, but yeah, Mason Mount is just integral to for his club and his country at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's fair to say that although Mount had a good game, Chelsea as a whole did not play to the best of their abilities this game. And Porto had plenty of chances to level things up with a couple before half-time, and there's plenty after half-time as well. But obviously Mendy made a few saves, and there was just others that were just off target. They couldn't seem to hit the target very much this game. Ben Chilwell then capitalised on a Jesus Manuel Corona mistake and took the ball around Porto's keeper and finished off the move with a finish that I think Fernando Torres would think that it's like, it would be very familiar to him, I think we could say. It was very Fernando Torres-esque, and it happened in the 85th minute, and that was his first Champions League goal, which was not a bad first Champions League goal to get, really, was it? So obviously they need three goals away from home now, Porto, to get this tie in their favour. So I think it's fair to say that's very unlikely, but how do you see the next leg going?
Well, and I kind of mentioned this before we started recording, unless Thiago Silva plays and thinks Porto are West Brom and has a shocker, I don't really think Porto have got a chance of scoring three away goals. So, yeah, it looks like Chelsea are going through, and I think there's, I know from all these social media posts that there's a lot of things that are falling into place that also coincidentally happened when Chelsea won the Champions League in 2012, when they beat, I think it was a Portuguese side in the quarterfinal, Spanish side in the semi-final. You know, this Fernando-esque kind of finish from Ben Chilwell as well. It's not looking good. I really don't want Chelsea getting to win another Champions League before Arsenal win their first. So it is worrying, but yeah, I think Chelsea are probably safely through, especially with how they're defending at the moment.
Obviously, this is the Champions League though, and stranger things have happened than Chelsea throwing away two goals away from home. So I think it's still fair to say that Porto, although they don't have a very big chance, there's a slim chance of them going through, especially after that West Brom game against Chelsea. Surely that could be playing on their minds a little bit still, because it's a bit of a haunting defeat, to be honest, isn't it? Conceded 5 to West Brom, but I guess only time will tell what's going to happen, and it's going to be a very interesting game to talk about next week, hopefully.
Clue number 4. This former player was rumoured to be the next manager of Borussia Mönchengladbach next season after the departure of Marco Rose.
So we are joined by Mehel Khan. How are you, Mehel?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, we're all good. So I guess we'll get straight into it. Obviously, you know, the listeners have just been hearing us talk about the Champions League. You know, the first legs have just been played of the quarterfinals. What are your kind of thoughts on this year's competition, and who do you think is going to win it?
I think it's very interesting because obviously you've still got Liverpool, Chelsea in it, and you could and Man City, and you could potentially see an English final, even if it's only just one of the English teams in the final. There is a strong possibility, and stronger than previous years, if I remember correctly. With the way the games went, the PSG and Bayern game was very interesting because obviously it looked like that PSG were in the clear, but then you see Bayern starting to make a comeback. So even though PSG should have shut up shop in the first leg, they kind of threw it a bit. So in the second leg, it could literally go either way. We really don't know. And obviously, being a second leg of quarter final, the game's going to be intense. So I'm looking forward to that. Chelsea and Porto, obviously, you can't really say it's expected in Champions League. Anything can happen. Same in the Europa League. But considering Chelsea are 2-0 up, we'll probably see Chelsea go through on there as well. And I'm saying City will go through, but then when it comes to Liverpool, I don't see them going through.
No, those predictions pretty much fall in line with what me and Pavan were talking about earlier. As you said, like, you can't predict the Champions League ever. I mean, look at Liverpool-Barcelona a few years ago. Like, that was mental, the comeback. But kind of leading on from the UCL, we saw obviously Erling Haaland and Mbappe in action in their respective games. I was kind of talking to Pavan a bit before we started this, where we're seeing players modelled around like Ronaldo a lot more than Messi at the moment. But who would you say is the next like Messi-Ronaldo rivalry? Would you say it's those two, or have you got other players in mind?
See, this is the thing. Haaland is an out-and-out striker, whereas Messi can also play on the wing. So when you can't really do a comparison like that, I don't think, because with Messi and Ronaldo, they both can play striker, they can both play wing, they can also play centre forward. So they're in a variety of positions. So it's more for direct comparison versus Haaland and Mbappe. I mean, obviously you can compare them as strikers, but when Mbappe can play in the wing but Haaland can't, it starts to become a bit tricky. But given the current crop of talent, you probably would have to say it's between them, because they'll probably be the most valued forwards in the world right now, and also the most sought after. We've seen many rumours about Mbappe to Madrid, we've seen rumours about Haaland to City, Madrid, Barcelona, literally anywhere. There were even rumours about Haaland to Arsenal, which I won't even get into. But yeah, I would basically say that's probably the next rivalry, because obviously they're also a similar age.
Yeah, it would definitely also take them going to rival clubs to really spark that rivalry as well. Obviously, hoping to see both of them at the Euros performing on like the big international stage. We've seen England in action in some qualifiers recently. Obviously, they won all three with quite a tight game against Poland. How do you see us doing at the Euros, and how far do you see us going in this tournament?
See, the thing is, right, England have a very strong squad and probably the strongest national team that there has been in a while. The problem is the manager is washed, in my opinion. I will just put it out there right now. Just because Southgate wears a Marks and Spencer waistcoat doesn't make him like the pride of England. This guy has so much attacking options, and yet he decides to set up with like 6-7 defensive players, which is ridiculous. Our strength isn't in defence, it's in attack, and yet he's setting up such a defensive-minded team. There are so many attacking options that you can't even fit them all into the full lineup, including the subs. And yet, despite that, he still goes for a really defensive option, even against teams that you would never imagine beating England, and in the qualifiers as well, which is just ridiculous. And even in the international league, he'll just set out really defensively. It's boring. And honestly, if Southgate adopts that mentality in the Euros, I will probably say quarterfinal at the very best.
Right, okay. Yeah, I definitely have got... I think I share your doubts about Southgate to a certain extent. Obviously, international football is a lot about kind of being pragmatic and staying in the game, but there is... Yeah, it does worry me, especially in that game against Poland. When we took the lead, you thought, okay, we'll just keep the ball for the next 5-10 minutes and just see it out. And he subbed on Reece James and went to a back five, and kind of Poland just thought, okay, well, we'll just go and attack then and see if we can grab a last-ditch winner. So, yeah, I really hope we can get to the semis at least. I think if we could do that, it would show some sort of progression. I mean, obviously, there's loads of debate about, you know, starting 11s and things like that. I mean, you could either give your full starting 11 or just kind of some players you'd like to see Southgate try and utilise a bit more. As you said, you know, the attacking options we have are pretty wild, but he seems to kind of try and sort out the defensive side a little bit too much.
I think I do have a starting lineup, but this would be a starting lineup based on also like what Southgate would probably play. So it'd be a 4-3-3. So in goal, I'd put Pope. Pickford should not be in that team, honestly. There's no way Pickford should be there. Left back, I'd probably go with Shaw or Chilwell. It's the close one. They've both been on form, so you can't really tell. Centre backs, Gomez and Stones. Right back, James. And in the midfield, because Southgate does like his two DMs and kind of need it, I would probably go with Henderson and Rice. I don't think Phillips is the person for it. And this is the tricky part. You can play like Grealish here. You can play Foden here. You can play Mount here. A lot of people would say Mount or Foden. I'm saying Grealish here because the front three that I would go with would be Rashford, Kane, and then either Sterling or Sancho, because Sterling can also play on the right.
Yes, that's a very strong team.
It's a very strong lineup. Probably the biggest omission that you have there is the whole Trent Alexander-Arnold situation, but
he's just not been informed this season. That's the problem. And when James has been informed, you have to pick the players that are informed rather than players that have that name.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree that he's not been up to his best, and it's James definitely has a claim to that spot. I think Liverpool fans will probably begrudge me saying that, but I mean, I think James has been a very solid right back for Chelsea this season, and he's obviously a really good choice to have there.
Yeah, I think Southgate's probably going to start Walker once we get to that Croatia game. I think it'll be Walker, but yeah, it doesn't look good for Trent under Southgate at least. But yeah, it seems like a strong lineup. You know, hopefully we can kind of do some damage and be a bit more just be aggressive, and you know, as you said, play to our strengths, because our strengths are in attack, not sitting back in and kind of defending. Now, onto kind of a topic that's a lot closer to my heart, is obviously my club, Arsenal. Just saw my team huff and puff for 86 minutes, fail to convert any chances against Slavia Prague last night in the Europa League, then concede a last-minute header from a corner, just doing it the Arsenal way. So not looking kind of great for the second leg. Not a difficult task, but definitely a situation we could have avoided. Now, Mihail, obviously, I know you are kind of a bit of a... Well, I mean, Kieran said it to me before we even started, that, you know, everybody just seems to hop on the bandwagon of kind of getting at Arsenal fans. And I did say to him, your job isn't really hard, because the Arsenal team does most of the clowning about for you, and then you can just kind of, you know, spurt it out back to the Arsenal fans, and the Arsenal fan base blow up, basically. We seem to blow up over the team lineups, over pretty much anything. Aubameyang's haircuts, whatever you want, whatever you want. The Arsenal fan base is there. The Arsenal Twitter, man, it's mental.
I just want to say it was really funny that after the Liverpool game on the weekend, it wasn't Aubameyang, Orba or anything like that trending. It was Travis Scott that was trending. And when you click it, it's just pictures of Aubameyang and Travis Scott compared.
Yeah, it didn't work against Liverpool, but obviously, Mahel, I know you are kind of a bit of an advocate for Unai Emery, and you know, I do understand, but do you want to kind of explain your position on the Arsenal managerial situation?
Yeah, I think basically Arsenal fans just ask for it when it comes to getting bantered by other fan bases, especially Man United. Man United fans love to banter Arsenal, but also, like I said, they ask for it. For example, a few years ago on AFTV, DT had a famous clip saying how sick, and he starts laughing, and that was towards Man United fans. Well, now Man United are second in the league, and Arsenal are what, 9th, 10th? And so it's kind of like you asked for it. And at the time when Arsenal were managed by Unai Emery, and Arsenal had lost to like Brighton, I think it was, on Crystal Palace, and then ended up fifth. People were saying, oh, Emery needs to be sacked. His tactics aren't working, this, that. Despite the fact that he got to a Europa League final. I mean, Chelsea were a much better team. Let's be real. And yet the people were angry over that. But then when it comes to Arteta, it's, oh, it's not Arteta's fault. Lacazette can't finish. Oh, trust the process. Arteta doesn't control the players. So why was it one thing for Unai Emery, but it's another for Arteta? Arteta is a PR merchant, right? Just because Emery did not have as good English to basically be able to communicate, and then ended up getting memed as a result. For example, the good evening memes, or where he's like walking and he's like distorted and he looks about 3 foot, stuff like that. Again, it's just Arsenal fans asking for it. They literally bantered their own manager, which then led to other fan bases bantering them. And now that Arsenal are in a worse place than they were before, you can't blame anyone but the fans. And I know you say, I know Twitter football is different to in real life, but at the same time, there are actually deluded fans that are like the Twitter ones out there in real life. They will say, for example, Arteta is a better manager than Emery because he won an FA Cup and he won a Community Shield. Well, guess what? Wigan won an FA Cup. Does that make them bloody like the best in the world? No, it doesn't. Like, are you serious? If the levels at this club, the so-called mighty club, have fallen to winning an FA Cup and Community Shield, and yet you want top players and Champions League football, it just contradicts each other. The right person for the job was, I'm not even actually saying the right person, but the better person for the job was Emery, and you should have given him time and also the resources, because he wanted Zaha, he got Pepe, and Pepe is a step over merchant. He does nothing else, and he's very one-footed. I mean, you saw, fair enough, he scored that goal yesterday, but you saw he had to use his left foot from the right side. It was like, his foot was like that with his left foot, because he can't use his right foot. How can you spend 72 million on a player that is very one-footed, and then when he comes to the league, basically does stepovers, and when it doesn't go his way, just looks very disinterested. Moving on from that, when you consider that Emery got to the fifth place and to a Europa League final with the players that he had, like Koscielny, fair enough, Tierney had been brought in at the time, but he came in injured. He barely even got to use Tierney. Tierney is considered as the next captain or Arsenal's best player, but Emery didn't have that. And then, like, Emery actually used Martinelli. I don't know what's going on with Martinelli and Arteta. Like, something must have happened, because Willian somehow manages to get over Martinelli, which is ridiculous. In my opinion, it should be like a Martinelli, Aubameyang and Pepe situation, or Saka, Aubameyang and Pepe. But there's so many ways you can mix it up, and yet you don't always, you never see Martinelli starting. So fair enough that Emery had his language barriers and he got memed and stuff, but in my opinion, he was on a better track to rebuilding Arsenal than Arteta is. Arteta is clueless, he has no experience, and for such a big club, how is Arteta allowed to do his work experience there? In fact, it's not even work experience. Man City was his year 11 work experience, and now Arsenal is his post-sixth form internship. Like, come on, are you serious?
Well, I feel like I've been put in a coffin and you've just absolutely stuck 1,000 swords in it.
Asking that question now, don't you?
Well, I'm not sure. I think we could do a whole another hour on this. We have to do a whole podcast episode on this. But look, I've been thinking about it, and I do have to concede that I do think Emery had some of the right ideas, and he probably did deserve more time. I have to say that. I think there was a bit of kind of instant reaction, like you said, because of the memes and because of the language barriers. It's a tough one. I think if you kept Emery, Emery would have been a perfect manager if you're trying to win Europa League games and if you're trying to cement your place back in the top four, right? But I don't think he had the tactical ability or the vision to rebuild Arsenal into a title winning side. That's where I think his limit was. I think his limit was taking an Arsenal team to fourth or third place. But yeah, I'm you know, defending Arteta here, and the first half season was, you know, great. Won trophies, you know, FA Cup, Community Shield, as you said. This season has been really poor. Like, I'm not gonna like kind of beat around the bush. It's been really poor. Like, it's one of the worst Premier League campaigns we've had. I don't think we've finished lower than this. So I think our lowest finish is 12th, and that was like in the 90s. I'm pretty sure. So yeah, the Premier League season has been really poor, especially up to Christmas. I mean, it was dire, man. Like, we're in lockdown. We're watching Arsenal. Like, mate, it wasn't good. Mental health for Arsenal fans went you know, into the ground.
Have you seen how many records Arteta's broken? And not even for the right reasons. They're the rubbish records, like most goals conceded and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't defend the on-pitch, but...
As a fan, I want you to tell me, genuinely, what is the process?
What is the process? Okay, right. Okay. The process is to... So the end goal for Arsenal is to obviously, you know, challenge for the major honours of winner, you know, Champions League, Premier League title. Now, the process is turning this bloated, unbalanced, poorly recruited squad. That goes back to Wenger days. I'm not blaming this on Wenger. I'm blaming it on part of Wenger and the regime, because the leadership, you know, at Arsenal was pretty clueless. We didn't buy anyone properly. There was a summer where we bought in Elneny and Petr Cech and then didn't win the league. Like, you know, it's unforgivable mistakes. But it's an unbalanced, bloated squad that seems to have this mentality of, we can do it in a cup game or in tournaments, as we've seen, because Arsenal have been winning FA Cups over the years. You know, latter days of Wenger, and then Arteta 1-1. And the mentality in this team doesn't seem to be able to sustain a league campaign. A 38 league game season, they just seem to crumble. That's not just Arteta, that's spanning like before. Now, what he's trying to do is he's trying to implement his style of play, which is going back to what many would call the Wenger way, which is, you know, possession based, attacking football. Now, obviously, it hasn't worked so far. I'll admit that. I'll hold my hands up. But I do think with the right time and the right backing, because that is crucial to this, because as I said, Arsenal's recruitment has been so poor over, you know, like basically since we last won the league in 2004, the recruitment has been shocking. And that's why we've kind of just carried on declining since then. But I do think with time and the right money, he can actually take us to the end game, to the end goal, which is Premier League title. I'm not even like joking. I mean, you probably do think I'm a little bit deluded because I'm such a Arteta stan, as many would maybe label me. But yeah, the situation isn't good now. But I think next season and this summer is probably one of the biggest in Arsenal's recent history, because if we don't perform next season, then I'm really going to struggle to defend Arteta and, you know, want him in. But I think he's definitely the right manager, and he's got all the vision to kind of get us back to the top. But it probably has taken an extra 6 months, 6 to 12 months, where there's a lot of pain that we've had to endure. And if it doesn't get better than from here by next season, then, you know, I think that is when a lot of the kind of Arteta fans may have to accept that it hasn't worked. But
so
for
you
now,
want to give him another season?
Oh yeah, for sure.
See, I would say they have to take the Chelsea approach, get him out now and get someone else to finish the job in the Europa League, because Lampard was doing better than Arteta in the league, yet he got sacked. And now Tuchel's in and finishing job in the Champions League. Chelsea could very well get to the final. So why not sack Arteta now and then get someone experienced like Nagelsmann, Allegri, etc. to finish the job in the Europa League and win it and get back in the Champions League and save yourself from a show?
If this was Emery in this position, right?
Yeah.
Would Emery have been sacked?
Yes.
Emery got sacked for less. That's the thing.
Yeah. I know, like, obviously Arsenal fans have it's more personal connection to Arteta, obviously being an ex-player and everything. That kind of gives him, like a higher standing than Emery in that regard.
Granted, yeah.
But surely if he's not getting the results on the pitch, you've got to then stand back. I'm all about giving a manager time. I support Brighton, for God's sake. Like, I've got to put up with us not being able to score for nearly half a season. But surely it gets to a point
where a club like
Arsenal has to be performing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I don't think... The difference between Chelsea situation and Arsenal situation is Chelsea are probably one of the best run clubs in the world, right? They recruit, they buy whoever they want because they sell whoever they don't want, they'll sell. 20 plus mil, gone. Like Tomori, don't want him, they'll get close to 30 mil. There's so many others. Like Morata, flopped. They've still got 50 mil for him. Like that's just crazy. But the point is that Chelsea's setup allows them to recruit and keep a very well-trimmed squad that still has a lot of quality to it. So whichever manager you put in, they can implement their style quickly and give you instant success. The difference with this Arsenal team is it's been on the floor for years. So I don't think any manager comes in and instantly makes us into a top four team. I just don't think it happens. Yeah, I mean, we could probably go on. We could probably talk about this until the Europa League season even finishes. But it's an interesting one. I mean, guys, if whoever's listening, get in touch. Check out our Instagram and let us know what your thoughts are on this. Unai Emery or Arteta? Where do Arsenal go from here? Should they give Arteta another year? Mihail, it's been really enjoyable. Well, I say enjoyable, but enjoyable for most part until we got to the Arsenal discussion. But thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'm kind of left a little bit speechless after that. But you know what? Arteta's going to lift the Europa League title. Mark my words. And if he doesn't, then you can come and send for me on our socials. But thank you again, Mihail.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Clue number 5. This player's main position was a CDM at Liverpool, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich.
So yeah, you've just heard Mihail Khan and our kind of discussion, I could call it, maybe debate. It's fair to say I'm fairly wounded. I am on the floor right now. He did put quite a few swords through my coffin. But you know what? I'm still backing the Arteta cause. I've saved the date in my calendar, 2024 May. Arteta's going to be lifting the Premier League title, and we're going to be back, baby. But for now, yeah, it's not looking good for now. Especially after what they did to me last night in the Europa League, just kind of conceding that last minute goal. But you know what? Arteta's still the man. Sorry, Mihail, but you haven't managed to kind of convert me. But yeah. Everybody has their view, and he was speaking facts. I can't lie, but we could have done a whole podcast on it. We ran over anyway. To go to the kind of suitcase of a superstar, you've heard the 5 clues that my little brother has given you. Kieran, what do you think of the clues? Obviously, not me doing it this week. How did you think he did?
I think they're really good clues, to be honest. I think I got it around the third clue. So There were some really solid clues.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't tell him to make it topical, but he just did. So, you know, with the Borussia Mönchengladbach link. But, you know, that by the way, whoever's listening, that does not mean he's going to be doing it every week. Okay, he's not going to usurp me and join Kieran as the co-host of Chatting Like Champions. I am intent on making sure I remain the co-pilot here, and no trainee. He's not getting a trainee pilot pass. He's not coming back into the Champions Airport. It's just me. So consider that a one-off. I'm here to stay.
Right. So that brings this episode of Chatting Like Champions to a close. Big thanks for listening, and also a massive thanks to Mahel for coming on and talking / interrogating Pavan, and not so much me, but more you. I definitely enjoyed that. Not sure whether you did as much, but let's move on from that. You can follow him on Instagram at Mahel Khan, and also go subscribe to his YouTube channel, where he produces content aimed at students, where he gives advice and insights into the university experience. Make sure to go follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ChampionsURN to keep up to date with all the latest news and future bonus content that is just on the horizon now. We will be bringing you a review of the second leg next week, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Stay safe. Thank you for choosing to fly with Chatting Like Champions, and we hope to see you again soon.